Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of The Only Podcast. I am your co-host, Austin Smith, joined as always by your other co-host, John Kirby. You can find us on Twitter at acsmith06 and at John_Kirby. Today is Wednesday, September 15th. And John, listen, we say every time that basketball is truly our favorite son, and this weekend was really made that decision tough for me. Because I got to say, the one kid who might have been struggling in school is really getting some good grades. But on the other hand, the other kid's just bringing all – you love all his friends, and he brought them all back for the weekend. And I just don't know between football and basketball what I enjoyed more this weekend. What about you?
It was a family affair. It was – my heart was full. You've seen some of the boys come back. You had every alum – I think in the NBA or that even played in the NBA recently that was there. I mean, the who's who and all the Spartan dogs came back and then they took a photo. For me, the capper, the peak, the absolute top of the mountain was that they all decided it was the right move to take a photo with Zeke, the Wonder Dog. And folks, I just kind of laid down after that one. Does it get better? Because this is it, man, for me. This is peak.
Is this heaven? No, it's East Lansing.
No, it's a young Suns pregame.
It's week two. I mean, so just to enlighten those who somehow didn't see it, MSU, a lot basketball alumni players all, like you said, the guys that played in the NBA or currently play in the NBA, and a couple others, Travis Walton specifically, came back to MSU for an alumni weekend, and just like the photos that you saw were like, it's Draymond, it's Miles, it's Jaren, it's Adrian Payne, it's Derek Nix, it's Cassius, it's Bryn, Denzel, like these names that have been such intimate parts of our basketball seasons for within the last 10 years and beyond, like just so freaking cool. And what a cool, like the other thing for me was like, I didn't know that was happening. So when I just saw the picture, I was kind of like, oh my God, what is taking place here? Like, is this just some, like what magical event has taken place that all of these people are in the same place? I'm like, oh my God, they're all at East Lansing. Oh my God, there's going to be so much good content. This is incredible. So that was just such a cool capper to the weekend. But really this is, once again, we're really playing favorites here because we should be talking about the fact that the football team is now 2-0 and not looking like a fluke 2-0.
It was a dominant performance from start to finish, Austin. And I did not research this because basically I feel like it's impossible to research, but I'd be hard pressed to think of too many other football teams at any level that have started the season and scored on the first play in back-to-back games. I mean, that's pretty crazy.
Especially from that distance. Like to do it with two 75-yard plays on the first – or 75-yard plays on the first play of the game, it's just so cool. And what I just love the call. I love the call this week so much. Again, for those who missed it, flea flicker on the first offensive play of the game, flea flicker, 75-yard completion to Jaden Reed. I mean, you know, the cool thing about the first play of the Northwestern game was that's just a power run. Like you're starting off conservative, just run the ball, get some yards on the very first play of the season. This one, they're like, we're going deep and we don't care. Like we're going to go big. And against an FCS team, where were you when they did it? But the thing that I love about it is that A, it's just such an FU of like, we're here to win. And that's just that. We're not going to play down to our opponent. And then the other part is now that's on film. Like that's such good coaching to put that out there as we might do this on the first play of the game. Gives every other team the rest of the way something to prepare for. And MSU is in kind of like one of these unique positions where honestly, they don't have a ton on tape with like a competent offense. So it's almost like adding another element to the mix of, hey, now you got to prepare for this every single week. Like that's just really good coaching.
So I want to clarify something about some of the online conversation,
banter
about that play. You know why that's an amazing play? Because one, it's not a trick play. Every team has that play in its book. Every team runs it every year. Okay. You know why it's a great play? It ends the game. It ends the game 10 seconds into the game. You know how important that is going into a game against Miami, Florida, where you're going to need so many people rotating into that game, like throughout, because it's going to be 90 degrees and muggy, humid. We'll get to the preview. You need the minimum amount of starters playing in that game. And if you noticed, by the end of the second quarter on Youngstown State's drive to score, you had walk-ons and freshmen on that drive.
Yep.
Not an excuse that they scored, but the goal is end the game. End it early. Kenneth Walker had 7 carries. Done. Jordan Simmons crushes it. And, you know, like Eli Collins plays well, gets hurt, but hopefully he'll be back. I guess what my point is, there's nothing wrong with ending a game early. You don't think Youngstown State had this one circled on their calendar for a year? Seeing MSU go 2-5 last year and saying, listen, we suck too, but I don't know. Why not? Well,
it doesn't even matter that MSU isn't, like, they saw a vulnerable opportunity. And to be honest with you, just because MSU's bad last year doesn't mean that they would treat beating them any differently this year. It would still be one of the biggest wins in program history, no matter what. No matter if MSU doesn't win another game the rest of the year, it doesn't matter. It's still beating a Big Ten team on the road. Like that's a massive deal for a lot of programs. So, to your point,
can you imagine?
I definitely circled that.
Can you imagine losing to an FCS team? You'd never be able to recover from it.
I don't think your program would ever be taken seriously the way that it should ever again.
You certainly quite frankly. Down, I'll tell you that much.
Oh, now I got to tell you, and we're going to get to that too, but I've got some thoughts there. But to stay with this game, you know, main takeaways, start with the offense. I mean, tough to overstate how well they played. You know, they ended up scoring 42 points, 35 in the first half. I think some people would probably look and say, hey, we would have liked to have scored a few more. And second half really pulled away. And it was 42-14, while a dominant win, is, you know, realistically, if MSU had kept their foot on the gas, probably could have been a bigger win. But I'll say a couple things. First, love, love, love that they're getting the backups time. To your point, this is not a game where you need your starters playing into the fourth quarter. And they didn't. And quite frankly, this roster is still very far from set. So getting these other backups, the young guys, I mean, on offense, Donovan Eaglin getting 6 carries for 33 yards, Montori Foster with a reception, Malik Carr getting his first real touches, Ian Stewart. Yeah. I mean, there's plenty of touches to go around. And so to spread that out is a beautiful thing. And if that comes at the cost of winning the game by more than 28 points or whatever it was, so be it. But I think you saw the dynamism of this offense. I mean, Jaden Reed is the weapon that I think everybody was expecting him to be right off the bat. I think it's pretty clear the reason why he wasn't last year might have had something to do with just the pieces around him in general. Thought he played great. Love to see what you saw out of Jordan Simmons. I mean, given, like you said, that Kenneth Walker only got 7 carries, which is maybe one of the best parts about this game. To see Simmons pick it up and really, again, look like a very, very capable running back is a beautiful thing. So offensively, really impressed. And really to cap it all off, and then I'll hand it over to you, John, is Peyton Thorne, man. Listen, I know it's Youngstown State. Peyton Thorne's ready to go. He made good decisions. Had a beautiful, my favorite decision of his was the keeper on the goal line. On a little play action or a little, I think it was Walker was still in the game, but the decision to pull the ball on the read option, I thought showed a lot of situational awareness and ability that MSU hasn't had in a ton of their quarterbacks. I mean, Lewerke probably the best example of a really mobile guy that they've had lately, but 4 touchdowns, no picks, doesn't have any picks through 2 games. Again, managed the game really well, found his guy Reed 4 times through touchdowns to 3 different players. I mean, it's been an impressive start for Peyton Thorne. You can see why he won the job. So that's me talking for a long time, John. What do you think?
Well, you know, the caveat everyone continues to make is, well, it's Youngstown State, and I totally get it. I will also note that Peyton Thorne is the first player to score 5 touchdowns in a game for Michigan State since 2008. Do you remember who that was, by the way?
2008? 5 touchdowns? Was that Javon Ringer?
It was.
Yeah.
And so, and it was the Michigan State's highest passer rating since the year 2000. Wow. So was it just Youngstown State? Yes. Has Michigan State played a handful of FCS teams since the year 2000? Yep. Have they played some really bad MAC teams since then? Yep. Have they played bad Rutgers teams since then? Yes. And no one has had a game like Peyton Thorne did. Now, there's something to be said about that. Like, you
absolutely.
You can acknowledge that, yes, it was Youngstown State, but you can also acknowledge that it was a fantastic game. One of the best we've seen from a quarterback. And kind of surprising to hear myself say that, considering the first series or two, it was not going very well for him. He was off on a couple of throws, and obviously not the first throw of the game, but he left some to be desired, but he completely bounced back and, you know, really kind of blew. He made me a little more confident in him going into this week. Now, the other thing is Jaden Reed. He's the first Big Ten player to have 2 receiving touchdowns of 75 plus yards since 2003. Okay.
Wow.
Again, back to the caveat. Yeah, it's Youngstown State. I mean, think about all the Big Ten teams that have played FCS teams since 2003. And Jaden Reed's the first guy to pull that off. So I think there's just, you know, we can obviously acknowledge it was a bad team they played, but it doesn't take away from the fact that some pretty impressive things were accomplished and makes you feel even more comfortable about the fact that Peyton Thorne has a favorite target in Jaden Reed, who also is not even the fastest guy on the team. So you can feel pretty good, you know, but it wasn't all great. There were some question marks, maybe here and there, missed assignments on defense, but Xavier Henderson's interception was something we haven't seen since the Western Michigan home game in, was it 2013?
Yeah. Curtis Drummond with one that was take your breath away. I mean, that was impressive. And not only that play, but like, you got to hand it to Xavier Henderson, man. He is playing ball this year. He looks like finally like the player that was the crown jewel of his recruiting class that was supposed to be, you know, the next great MSU no fly zone leader. Mm-hmm. And, you know, listen, he's always been a quality player, but he's starting to be well more than that. I mean, in this game, he had 8 tackles, a sack, a tackle for loss, and an interception. I mean, that's, again, you want to say it's Youngstown State, that's fine, but that's what you're supposed to do when you're a great player playing against the FCS team. And by the way, he was out of the game after, I think he played 3 quarters, maybe less. So this guy is making consistent plays when he's in the game.
Yeah, dude, he's a stud. And, you know, that's what you need when you have a lot of new faces, you know, talented players, but new faces in the entire defense. He is on NFL radars now, as he should be. He's doing everything right. And I think the one stat that jumped out to me was this is back-to-back games with a sack. So they're using to blitz, and he's getting home when they do use him. I mean, talk about, if you're an NFL scout and you see a guy that can get to the quarterback on blitz packages, that can intercept the ball with one hand, you know, making up ground. When he was in a cover one, and he got all the way across the field on his own. And then he's also, I don't think I've seen one missed tackle from him in 2 games.
Nope.
So like, it's the whole package, right? So I'm kind of pumping him up, but he's building nicely to a Miami team that's going to be able to match his athleticism.
Yeah, and I think it's, you know, Henderson's, I think, been the star of the defense so far. But, you know, I have to remember in this game too, like, again, Youngstown State ran the ball really, really effectively in their first game. Yes, it was against Incarnate Word, but they had a strength. It was their quarterback was especially had ran the ball well, Crenshaw and and McLaughlin too. Crenshaw had 69 yards, nice, in this game and a touchdown, but his long run was 9. McLaughlin had 13 carries for 34 yards, and then Turner had 5 carries for 48, and including the touchdown. I think he came in kind of late in the game. But MSU totally shut that down, and that was without Drew Beasley, and that was without at least two. I can't remember who the other defensive end, but there,
Drew Jordan and Octavian Brown didn't play.
That's three of your top five defensive ends. I mean, Jeff Petrowski was getting a ton of tick, and to his credit, played really well at a tackle and a half and a sack, had a QB hurry.
You texted me about him, and you're like, okay, we might have a guy. And
he is Brandon Long. For those of you that remember the very beginning of the Mark D'Antonio Michigan State era, there was a guy named Brandon Long who wore the same number, who was just like a beefy dude. Might not have played at a ton of places, but just was all effort and kind of got the job done when he was called upon. He reminds me so much of Jeff Petrowski. And listen, that's functional depth. Those are the guys that you want playing in this game and making plays. And to see that was again another super encouraging sign.
Dude, we haven't had depth. It feels, well, I mean, you just think about last year. And if you said last year, you know, the top or three of the top four defensive ends are out, I honestly don't even like, I don't want to think about that.
I might not have watched the game.
So
yeah.
I mean, it's exciting to see guys step up when they get their opportunities like that, you know, as well, showing up in the moment and making the defensive staff say like, okay, we can rotate this guy in, we can trust him, you know, to just hold the line. That's all you're asking.
I've got to say one thing, and we can wrap up our kind of our coverage of this game. Well, two things real quick. Was once again impressed with the linebackers. I thought Quavo Crouch, 7 tackles, looked much more in control in this game. Mm-hmm. I think against Northwestern, he really sort of looked like he was
moving a little too fast,
looked very in control in this game. And I think we saw that Cal Halliday might actually be a little bit of a player, which
as you
go around the unexpected things, like it's like you build a baseball team or like really any professional team, you have, like more so than college, you have to find, like, in order to get out of the doldrums of a rebuild, you have to hit on like a bargain bin free agent or like something unexpected or like a second round draft pick or something like that. Same thing applies sometimes in college football, where you just need, especially when you're trying to really take that step back to where you were, like, you need a couple of surprises. And Cal Halliday has been, I would say, by far the biggest surprise on this team thus far. He's played, he just looks like he knows what he's doing. He's a good old-fashioned Michigan State linebacker. Super, super impressive. But we've said it a lot. We caveated the fact that, oh, this was, you know, State, all that stuff. My answer to that is that when you look at these first two games, first of all, Michigan State's 2-0. We should all be thrilled with that, because guess how many wins we had last year? 2. So that being, you got to be pretty happy with that right off the bat. But the fact of the matter is, if we were looking at Michigan State at the beginning of the year through the guise of, I'll put it this way, when you're a good team, you look at the games like these first two and you think, not should we win, but how should we win? And how should we look when we win? If you were looking at Michigan State with that lens, you'd still be thrilled with these first two games, because you went and you won against a Big Ten team on the road that was admittedly not that talented. It looks like it's going to be a down year for Northwestern. But even knowing that, yeah, they're not a great team, Michigan State went in and did what you're just supposed to do against not great teams. And you won handily. You had the game in control from the very beginning. You dictated the whole game. Yeah, Youngstown State's an FCS team. But guess what? Michigan State did what you're supposed to do against FCS teams. They're up 35-7 at halftime. Like, that's what you're supposed to do. So if you had expectations and you were looking at these games, you should still be thrilled, which makes me, as a person who was being the optimist and saying 7-5 in the room, feel like we, you know, it's hard to not be very excited about what you've seen in these first 2 weeks, regardless of who the opponents are.
Yeah, I think you go from okay, we survived and are 2-0. Like if you told us at the beginning it would be 2-0, you'd say okay, probably squeaked out a win in Evanston and hemmed and hawed against Youngstown State until the third quarter. You know, that's what you'd probably think happened. Didn't. Now, it doesn't mean the team still can't tank, or it doesn't mean they can't, you know, go bad, but it's certainly a lot. I feel a lot better about things today than I did 2 weeks ago today. And that's a positive.
That's a huge positive. I mean, I think I said this to Sheehan. I feel as good about a Michigan State team as I have felt since I think it was Western walloped them after the first game after the 10-3 season.
Well, yeah, they beat Western 55-17, I think it was. I hate that I know that. And we were like, okay, maybe the coaching shuffle worked. And it was just fool's gold. And that now I'm just kind of sad.
Yeah, but this does not appear to be. Listen again. Are we saying they're going to go 10-0 or 12? Or yeah, no, we're not. We're not that crazy yet. But we are saying that they're 2-0, and a lot of people were very skeptical that they would be 2-0 at this point, and certainly very few probably thought they would look the way that they did so far. So, saying all that, John, do you think it's time to take a commercial break?
Yeah, let's take a commercial break, and then we'll take a walk around the nation, the Big Ten, and do a nice little Miami, Florida preview.
Love it. We're getting the break out of the way early. All right. Here we go, 3, 2, 1. Yeah, we're back. Ugh. This is so much more fun when we win, I have to say. Especially when we get to talk about the other teams and how funny some of these games were. So, John, let's take a look around the nation here.
Should we? Okay, I'm gonna start with a game that we didn't look out for, but it had two things that I loved. Texas A&M travels to Broke Buff, Colorado Boulder, and beats them 10-7. Here's why I love this. Texas A&M frauds, like they always are. They have been exposed. They did have other quarterback go down. I don't care. You're 10-7.
Let me tell you something. You want some, I'm sorry, and then I'll let you get back to it. You want to watch some terrible quarterback play? Ooh. Go ahead and run back the tape on this one. I had this one on the flip back, and every time I looked, it was two quarterbacks either getting sacked or throwing the ball as hard as they could directly into the ground. The Lombardi special, if you will.
Well, let's walk through that. Brendan Lewis, Colorado's quarterback, went 13-25 for 89 yards and a pick. Zach Calzada, the backup, came in and went 18-38 for 183 yards. That's good for 4.8 yards per.
Dude, I gotta say, after watching Calzada, I am shocked he completed a single pass. Like, he looked, and I was just, again, I was flipping back and forth, so obviously I missed some stuff. But I've never seen a quarterback look less confident in a game. Like, he looked like he had never played the sport before. And on top of all of that, they were up, they were down 7-3 in the fourth quarter, which in and of itself is pathetic for a Texas A&M team that is loaded with talent. Right. And he was running the ball down near the goal line and extended to score and fumbled on the one and lost the ball. And they thought it was a touchdown, so they celebrated and everything. And then they did the review and he lost the ball. And I was like, that's it. Like he will never ever recover. And to his credit, he bounced back, and obviously they found a way to win, but like not exactly impressive against Colorado. But I thought he was broken. Like, I really thought they would go to the third stringer. So listen, if they're keeping him in there with that, first of all, if their quarterback's not healthy, they are going to get torn limb from limb in the SEC. And then additionally, how bad must the third stringer be if this guy is out here playing like that?
Absolutely. And one other thing, I think we need to consider the fact that Mel's guys were able to compete with stacked roster and Texas A&M, and they just couldn't get coached up enough to actually win the game. And I love all of that. Like I love that.
I love that spin zone. Whether it's true or not, I love the spin zone.
It's something else. So let's keep moving down here. We also had Texas travel to Arkansas, and I mean, we called this. It's just so easy. And again, we know the like these movies where we've seen the movies, we've read the books. They're fantastic. You know how they end. And we sit at the campfire and we say, and I say, Austin, tell me the Texas story again. And you say, well, John, there once was a team that got fat and sassy after saying they were back for the 80th time in a row. And they didn't just lose, dude. They got their absolute ass kicked this game.
Oh yeah. I mean, hand up. This was one of – I made – two gambling mistakes this weekend.
Oh boy.
Yeah, the first, a lot of correct, I have to say. Overall, pretty solid weekend, not to brag, but two missteps, and that was trusting A, the Raiders last night, even though they did end up winning, I took them with the under, and of course they could have easily done it and instead just gave up huge plays to Lamar Jackson. That's not the point. The point is, I also trusted Texas. Mm-mm. Like idiot. I went against everything we said. It was one of those things where I saw Tom Fornelli write to take Texas. And I'm like, Tom's a smart guy. Okay. Tom's a real sharp dude. He hit on a lot of other ones this past weekend. And I'm like, you know what? Maybe I am just like, I got to trust the talent here. Not the fact that like everything we talked about was obviously correct. But yeah, I went with Texas. But like, I got to tell you, man, give Arkansas some credit. Like, dude, they Sam Pittman coached them up, and I don't know if they're going to do anything more than maybe make a bowl, but like,
I don't know.
So they're a tough team, dude, and they're tough on the ground, and that quarterback can actually really throw the ball. So it's a fun team.
Chaos.
Big Suey, baby.
Dude, why not? They never have nice things. I don't care if they do well. That's fine with me. They are going to go pleasantly 7-5 and be thrilled. Yeah. Utah and traveled to BYU in the Milk Bowl, and it was everything you'd want and more. BYU won 26-17. The only thing that I thought was notable about this game, and it kind of bummed me out that it happened after I heard about it, but there was a player for BYU who scored a touchdown, and the thing that bummed me out about it is he played for Utah prior. Wow. Samson Nakua. He had scored for Utah in this game 2 years ago, and then he scored in this game. And I'm like, I just don't dig that. Like, for some reason, I'm fine with Ben Van Simmeren doing it.
I was just going to say.
But I'm not okay with this because I'm a homer, and that's how these things work. Yes. But – can you imagine how upset the Utah fans were when they saw this kid score on them?
Oh, man. The amount of things that they probably said, because you know they say some things there in Utah. Yeah. That's a bummer. Like, I think it's only cool when it happens to your team. Like, I hope Ben Van Simmeren has, like, right, 10 sacks against Michigan. But, like, I don't know. If I saw one of our guys transfer there and do well, I would, man, they would go right out to the top of my hit list of just, yeah, like, guys I'll never quite get over. And like, dude, if you're going to leave BYU or leave Utah,
go, like, way,
go somewhere warm. Isn't that the point? Like,
the goal.
If you're like, I got to get out of Utah, where am I going to go? Somewhere else in Utah. Like, that doesn't make any sense to me. I must love the cold.
All right. And, well, spin zone. He was thinking, I'm going to get my warm paid for. I'm going to Mormon mission this thing and get sent out somewhere.
Mm, you know what I mean? Okay. Now, I'll buy that. He just really wanted a free trip to Central America. I can get on board with that.
Okay. So fast forward to another game that we had circled, and this was my OAP game, and it almost happened. But App State traveled to Miami and hung with the Hurricanes, who came out on top 25-23. We said, now listen, I don't think this is an indictment on Miami. I think Appalachian State's a good team. I don't think they're a great team, but I think they're a solid program. And do you remember, do you know who Appalachian State's quarterback is?
I was going to ask you the same thing. Chase Bryce, not a country singer, despite his name. He sure sounds like one. Yeah, former portal target, former Clemson and Duke quarterback, right, which is fun.
Mm-hmm.
Man, that's tough. There's no way that that's how he saw his college career going. I'm just saying, on signing day when he committed to Clemson, I don't think he was like, yeah, three schools later, I'm headed to App State.
Dude, I know. And you know what's funny about, not funny, but I bet he ends up tagging on as a third string quarterback in the NFL. And just like 10 years from now, or 6 years from now, we'll see him in a preseason game and be like, oh my God, Chase Bryce. Yes.
Yeah. Riding that Clemson wave. I respect it. I hope he does. I want good things for Chase Bryce. But yeah, I mean, this was, it might not be an indictment of Miami, but it's not encouraging if you're a Miami fan. Like, this is one of those games, again, when you're, this is the danger of expectation, as we've talked about so many times. If this is Michigan State this year, like, again, if we're looking at this as a beginning of the year context, I'm like, you know what? We hung on and won. Good for us. Tough win.
Right.
Got our asses kicked week one. So good for us for hanging in there and winning. But because this is a team that is supposed to be, you know, they've got all these top 15 recruiting classes back to back to back. It's Miami. They just, you know, all of this stuff. To win a game like this shows me you didn't handle the Bama loss all that well. And like, I thought you were supposed to be the more talented team. Like, where's the talent? It wouldn't make me feel great if I was a Miami fan.
Yeah, they are not happy right now. I will tell you, I have seen some pretty damning things about wanting Manny Diaz out. And I can tell you that Mel Tucker has an opportunity to run multiple coaches out this year. Let's just put that out there. If MSU were to be a handful of teams that I can think of, and I'm not saying it's going to happen, but to have the opportunity, that's like he has the Grim Reaper opportunity in front of him.
Yeah, knowing what little we know, well, not little now, knowing what we know about Mel, I'm sure he knows that.
Oh, he knows. He knows. So we'll get to the Miami game in a minute, but let's walk through the Big Ten because you had a chance to watch a lot of these. One that I couldn't because it was banished to the ACC network was Illinois at Virginia at 10 a.m. our time. And just as well, Bert, why did you take this job?
I think it's not that he took the job. It's that he had the audacity to win his first game.
What does Nebraska think? I
think Nebraska is looking for Scott Frost home when they're ready to burn it down is what I think they're thinking.
Virginia beat them 42-14.
42-14. Yeah, that's not good. It's simply not good. I don't know, man. Illinois football is just, it's kind of sad. Like, and listen, I know this is coming from like, yeah, they beat Michigan State, yada, yada, yada. Go ahead, talk. That's fine. But dude, it's bleak. Let's put it that way. It's bleak times. Even with the Burt hire, the honeymoon period was fun. That literal 1 week was really fun. And now they're going on the road getting blasted by a mid ACC team. And by the way, their quarterback is a lefty and he's one of those guys that throws with his front hand, like down, you know, like down, like his hands near his knee instead of up where you typically see a quarterback like lead arm. So he doesn't even look like he should knows how to throw a football. And I think he threw for 4 touchdowns in this game. It's the aesthetics are all terrible right now for Illinois.
5 touchdowns and 405.
That just all while looking like Forrest Gump trying to throw a football.
It's terrible. So Illinois, man, Bert has a long mountain to climb. We also saw Minnesota bounce back, take down Miami, Ohio Redhawks. Here's my stat about this game. The Ghosts will be fine. I'm not too worried about this one. This is the game where they lost their best player They just came off of a emotional letdown, you know, of the Ohio State loss. And I don't want to say they looked past the team, and I think that's fine. The Ghosts had zero passing yards in the second half.
Wow.
Zero. And it's not like they were winning by, you know, 30. They ended up winning this game by 5. So they just couldn't complete a pass.
That's Big Ten porn right there. I mean, that's as big as anything's ever been. You know, again, if I'm Minnesota, that stat bums me out. Like, as excited as I get and as much as I laugh at it, it bums me out super hard because Tanner Morgan is like a seventh-year starter and is apparently just like content not completing passes, which is not ideal.
8 of 17 for 112 yards. Here's a little fun fact. Miami, Ohio quarterback, Brett Gabbert. Does that name sound familiar?
Oh.
Uh-huh. Little brother.
Sibling to Blaine. No offense to anybody out there named Blaine or Brett, but tough luck for the parents of the Gabbert family, I'm just going to say.
They got their kids' college paid for. They're fine.
Yeah, listen, they're the ones laughing at me. Trust me, I'm the guy sitting in, you know, sitting in the chair talking on the podcast, not playing college football. But I'm also not named Blaine or Brett Gabbert, so who really wins?
So let's fast forward. Northwestern bounces back, takes down the Indiana State Sycamores 24-6. Here's a concern. Indiana State held Northwestern to 125 less yards of offense than Michigan State did. How do you feel about that?
That's not ideal. I'll say in a vacuum without knowing who played or like what the deal is, like whether it was one of those lots of backup situations or whatever.
No, Hunter Johnson went 9 of 16 for 66 yards.
I think he might just suck, man. Like, yeah. I think he's just really bad.
Okay, so what happened against us?
I don't know. He's just bad. Listen, I would actually take this completely away from your point because I'm feeling defensive. Dabo Swinney needs to catch a little more crap. Like, okay. Listen, I know you nailed Trevor Lawrence. DJ Ungalale looks incredible, but like,
how about Deshaun Watson,
but also like Chase Bryce and Hunter Johnson, not like breaking any records. He just needs, listen, he gets so many good things said about him in terms of like the job he's done, and he deserves all of them, but I think we should also point out the fact that he is lucky he got Trevor Lawrence, because otherwise you're talking about two obviously less than ideal quarterback options there. So I'm going to stick with that. Kelly Bryant was also good at Clemson. I'll give him that one. He's got plenty of good ones, but let's just say we took him to a two-strike count. Okay. He's been taken to the two-strike count. That's all I'm trying to say.
I feel like there's one more quarterback that I can't think of that has transferred from there. Am I wrong in thinking?
I mean, it's very possible. He's been there for a long time now.
Yeah, I mean, not the point that a quarterback transfer, that happens to everyone, but that the quarterback is not great is the shocker. I'm going to think on that one. It's going to come back to me. I'm sure our listeners are screaming at me right now. While I do that, I want you to hear your take on the biggest upset of the season. Oregon Ducks travel into the Horseshoe and win 35-28 without their best players.
Yeah. I think we sort of said it last week, but Ohio State is really going to – well, two things. Offensively, they're going to go as C.J. Stroud goes. As – I mean
– they did. He was dope.
And they – no, but the thing is, like, he – this was a very big stat, no result game for him because he was – yeah, they're going – between the 20s, he was absolutely crushing it. And I mean, I know he made some big plays. And, like, overall, like, you can't be that mad at his performance. But he threw for, like, over 500 passing yards, and they still only put up 28 points. To me, that means he was missing, like, big clutch plays. Like, when the moment gets big – this was his first time with the moment getting really big, and he wasn't able to kind of pull it together and make the plays happen. Now, I think Oregon sort of has the perfect recipe for beating an Ohio State team when a quarterback's not making all the plays, in that they have a really, really good defense, even without Kayvon Thibodeau. And so they were just Ohio State wasn't able to just sit back and run the ball a million times and grind the clock, which is what they've been able to do in the past, like the JT Barrett years. That's all they did. But now they don't. Apparently, Oregon's defense is just a little bit too good for them to be able to do that. But yeah, I mean, offensively, I don't know that I'd get super duper worried if I'm Ohio State. Like, I think they're still probably good enough to win the Big Ten.
They're gonna make
offensively. Defensively is where I'd be a little bit worried, because I think I might be a lot of it worried. Like Oregon, I watched a lot of that game flipping. I had the two screen going with MSU's game on the other screen, and Oregon, I didn't think did anything like unique on offense. Anthony Brown looked really good. Didn't really have to run. He took some shots downfield, but it was a lot of running and a lot of short stuff kind of to the sidelines, and then just Oregon's receivers sort of making plays. I don't know in the Big Ten, like, how many offenses are going to test Ohio State's defense the way that Oregon's could, but like, that's a vulnerable defense. Like Indiana, to me now, if they can really pull it together and become the team that they were last year, there's no reason they can't give them similar bits. So
yeah, you said that last week. I agree. And you know, there's blood in the water, man.
Penn State, they're too stupid of a team to actually pull it off. Like, they're just too dumb, sure. But they have the pieces to be able to make that happen. I don't think 2 weeks in, I don't think Ohio State's as sure of a bet as it once felt like they would be.
Yeah. But then kind of look around and we'll get to it, but it's like,
when I say not as sure of a bet, I mean like going from 100% to like 85% of sure for me. So like, they're still like the overwhelming favorite, but I just don't think it's as sure as it was.
Yeah, there's blood in the water, man. And it was just Ryan Day's first regular season loss ever.
That's insane.
And people are wanting him gone. It's like,
I love that.
For who? They want Urban back, by the way, which is hilarious. You can't give up 500 yards of But here's the thing. Oregon gave up 612 yards, and they won an away game. I'm not quite sure how that happens. You know,
they didn't really let them run the ball that well, from what I remember watching. And like, it was a very kind of old school MSU, like bend but don't break.
Well,
they made plays in the red zone. When the field gets small, that's when it's harder for young quarterbacks. And I thought that Stroud, like, especially in that Ohio State, I feel like that offense this year is going to be very, like, if they don't hit on the big plays, Stroud is going to have to get a lot better, because like, those teams are going to look at the playbook that Oregon just threw out there in the red zone, and they're going to copycat it. And there's teams that have enough talent like on defense in the Big Ten to give Ohio State some trouble. I don't know if anybody can score with them, which ultimately will be why they probably run the table. But if Ohio State wants to win a national championship, which let's just be totally honest, is their goal every single year, it's on Stroud, in my opinion, and that defense is going to have to step up. But if the defense can't, that Stroud's really he's got to be able to make those plays. I think by the end of his career, like, he's going to be very, very good. Like, all that talent's there, but they got to make an adjustment one way or the other.
I feel like you're picking on a freshman in the second start who had 484 yards and 3 touchdowns, and like, the blame needs to be solely on the defense. And also, I feel like you got to be able to look at your running backs and offensive line and say, like, hey, guys, we need to do a little better than 128 yards of rushing.
Mm-hmm.
That just needs to happen. You know,
something's got to give there, for sure.
All right, let's keep moving to another barn burner. Rutgers traveled to the Carrier Dome to take on the Syracuse Orange. And, folks, I watched this on my phone because I enjoy cringy things. It was 0-0 at halftime. It was awesome. We had missed field goals. We had turnovers. We had so many incompletions. It was everything you could want from a Rutgers-Syracuse game. Noah Vedral, Rutgers quarterback, went 22 of 28 for only 145 yards passing. And
man, that's awesome.
You had Tommy DeVito, which is like, of course, Syracuse quarterback. He goes 15 of 26 for 149 yards. And it's like, this sucks. Syracuse had 74 yards of rushing as a team. Rutgers had 42 carries for 50 yards rushing.
Whoa.
Yep. It was incredible stuff. 1.2 yards per carry.
That's I'm glad you watched it so that there's evidence that this game actually took place, because I'm not sure how many other people are showing up for that one. That's I mean, dude, to score 7 points at home if you're Syracuse is bad enough. Mm-hmm. But to do it against Rutgers is terrible. Give the Shiano man some credit, though, man. This is another thing where it's all about expectation. They just went on the road and beat another Power 5 team. They won. Like, two they wins. Won the game.
Just like us. Two wins. They had two wins last year. They're thrilled.
They should be.
Here's a question. Who plucked Shiano?
Oh, man, I would pay good money to have him end up at USC. Just for the story. I would also love to see him. I mean, it won't happen because they just hired a new coach again. Would love to see him go back to Tennessee, but where he never actually went. But I don't know. But it, you know, no joke. I gotta think somebody will make a call if he gets them to a bowl game.
Yes.
Somebody's looking at him and thinking like, man, if he can do that here, he could walk on water somewhere else.
Of course, you can't tell me there's not an middling ACC team that doesn't look at that and say, he knows how to rebuild.
Here's one. Mm-hmm. PJ Fleck gets the call somewhere else. Why is Minnesota not thinking about it?
Oh, that's interesting.
I'm just throwing it out there.
Okay. Man, the coaching carousel is going to be awesome. Yes. Purdue headed to UConn and picked up a 49-0 win in Storrs, Connecticut. And I got to tell you, I told you listeners, UConn season is going to be special. In my heart of hearts, I didn't believe it'd be this bad. I knew it was going to be bad. I knew it was going to be bad so much so that I was telling you guys about this. But Purdue went 49-0. UConn has had their coach already quit. We're headed to week three. Here's how bad it is, guys. UConn's best chance to win a game this year. And again, they still get to play UMass and Yale. Their best chance of winning a game this year is Yale. And they have an 18% chance of beating Yale, according to the ESPN FBI. Yale.
That's of Ivy League fame. Yeah, that's bad. It is. I think they got to really consider folding the program. There's no chance they're making money on it.
They have to. You have to, because, and here's the thing, is we like kind of were laughing and joking about, oh, they're going to go play at Clemson this year. That's dangerous. Like, dude, now it's dangerous.
This is a Bishop Sycamore situation. That's what I'm saying. Like, they should not be allowed to go do that.
Mm-hmm. That's why we need relegation. Excuse me.
They gotta fake a COVID outbreak. I'm sorry to those people who have been affected by it, but I think you really need to just fake. You gotta get out of that. You have to get out of that.
Everyone will nod and just be okay with it. You know,
just a handshake agreement. Clemson, you get your win. Scrimmage, you'll play much more talented players.
Let people still tailgate, you know, it's fine, you know, but
play Bishop Sycamore.
Jeez. Okay, here was a game that wasn't as close as I thought it would be. Buffalo headed to Nebraska, and Nebraska asserted themselves, won 28-3. Nebraska's got to be asking themselves what happened in that Illinois game. I mean, Buffalo is probably better than Illinois. I think I can say that. And that's not – Buffalo is not good. But I just – Nebraska is also not good. Mm-hmm. And that brings me all the way full circle on – we've just listed off four terrible New England-based teams. What if the New England colleges just combined for a super team?
So that, I think it's a great idea.
So they could go 6-6.
I don't know that they should play football in the Northeast. Like, I don't. Nobody cares. Nobody cares anywhere up there. I mean, you have, like, the one school in New Jersey that's good. And, like, the Hun school. It's like, okay, that's fun. But, like, just skip the rest. Nobody cares up there. I guess, yeah, we'll play it like FCS. Call it, like, yeah, like FCS Northeast or, like, in NCAA football. And just jump them. Throw them all into one. Make them play in the ACC, and yeah, they'll go. They'll play a bowl game. They'll play the Pinstripe Bowl every single year.
If we combined Rutgers, Syracuse, UConn, Buffalo, UMass, Boston College, and Maryland, I think you could probably find 7 wins with Schiano coaching them.
Yeah, I think Randy Edsall has to be on the staff, though. That should be part of the deal. He has to come out of retirement because he's been too involved with too many of those programs to get away with this.
It's true. Oh, man. Okay, so Ball State played at Penn State. Penn State picked up a 44-13 win. Sure. I mean, this is kind of one of those, I'll put it in the category of MSU's win against Youngstown. Like,
yeah,
you did it. You're a good team. Good job.
Yeah, shake their hands and move on. I don't think there's anything else that needs to be said.
Same with Wisconsin beating Eastern Michigan 34-7. Exact same thing. Took care of things against Idaho 56-14. Yep. Maryland beats Howard 62-0. Okay. And
great.
And then we get to the fun, more fun ones. Iowa. No longer Frisky. I think they've graduated from Frisky. Beating Iowa State by double digits in Jack Trice Stadium, 27-17. The defense was so solid that they pulled Brock Purdy.
Yeah. I watched a decent amount of this one. Well, first of all, I don't think I'll ever call them anything but Frisky. They're just always going to be Frisky. I think when they win the Big Ten, like when they win the Big Ten championship game, then they'll graduate from Frisky. Until then, I think but Frisky Iowa is so freaking back. They are so back, and it makes me so happy. It makes sense, right? This is probably about 4 years since the last Frisky Iowa, and they're right where they should be.
Yep, they come up for air every 5 years or so. This is about the timing.
I will say about Iowa State, I think I'll be very interested to see how the rest of their season goes. There was a bit of a fraudulent meter to Iowa State in this one. I think Breece Hall's a really nice player. I think they'll probably be okay in the Big 12, but like the fact that they were in the top 10 is one of those things where it's like, do we need preseason polls? Do we? Because that's not a top 10 team. That's a fun like reward for them for being good last year, but that's not a top 10 team. It's I think they'll be okay in the Big 12 because it's so spread out and they're a tough team and they kind of zig to the zag of the conference. Like they just looked like the moment was too big for them, which is sort of weird considering the games that they've won in the last few years. And the fact that, again, Brock Purdy, a very Tanner Morgan-y vibe in this game. But that's not to take anything away from Iowa. I mean, Iowa looked like the team from the big conference that came in and was like, yeah, we're Iowa. Like, we've kind of been in these moments before. We expect to win. Like, they looked like a team coached by a guy who's been there for a billion years and played this game a billion times. So I think Iowa is got to be the prohibitive favorite in that side of the conference now. They got a shot.
You can just feel the toe stubbing coming, though. Like, you just know they're going to lose a dumb one.
Oh, yeah. Don't get me. Please do not mistake this for me saying that they're going to run the table and go to the Big Ten championship game. There's another shoe that drops somewhere in here that's inexplicably dumb that will keep them from accomplishing what they could accomplish.
I said last time at Northwestern, I'm actually feeling at Maryland.
Yes, I would agree with that assessment. I don't think Northwestern. I don't know who Northwestern's beating.
That's what I mean.
Big Ten this year, but yeah, at Maryland feels like enough of a chaos play where Maryland goes 7-5, and that's their big win. Yeah, that feels very possible.
All right, and then the Washington Huskies get kind of humiliated in the Big House, 31-10. This was a good win for Michigan. They ran the ball at will. They ran similar plays over and over. And honestly, like, I think that's the, like, a, that's kind of, it's boring for people to watch, but that's like the purest form of dominance when you just do it over and over. This is the Michigan Harbaugh when you beat bad teams. This is exactly.
This was the classic Harbaugh Michigan game. Though. Exactly. Like, again, I watched this entire game. I don't know how this game makes you feel any different if you're a Michigan fan than you've felt since they lost to Ohio State on the JT Barrett run. Like, I don't know how this makes you feel any different at all. Like, you cannot possibly come out of either of these first two games feeling any type of emotion about your quarterback. And you know what's going to happen. Both those running backs are really good. Blake Corum is really good. Like, yeah. I had fun watching him play. And, man, when he gets a hole, it's good night. Yeah. And Hassan Haskins is a beast. I mean, those are two good, really good running backs. And they have 1,000 tight ends. I'm not sure if any of them are good, but they have them.
Can relate.
Yeah. Yikes. But I think this style works against above average to bad teams. But as soon as you play a dynamic offense, or as soon as you turn the ball over or make a mistake, you're done. Like, in order to play that type of game, you have to play it perfectly. And you have, like, that, that's it. There's very, very little margin for error, in my opinion, with that style of play. Because if you go 3-and-out several times, like, they didn't go 3-and-out because Washington's defense was good. So I give them credit for winning that game. Washington's offense was abysmal. They should have put that game away. If you had any type of dynamic offense, you would have put that game away. You could have put that game away in the first half. And it was very much not put away. Washington was not totally out of that game until the second half. And when they started actually throwing the ball down the field, they're down their top three wide receivers. I think they had another player that was out. Like, I think that was the quarterback's first year. No. Yeah. I think he's a freshman quarterback. Like, the fact that Washington was ever rated in the top 25 is, again, another indictment of the preseason poll. Like, you can feel like you can be happy that you won that game. It was under the lights. You made some big plays. You have an identity again, which is, I guess, nice. But, like, I don't know how Michigan fans look at this team and feel like this is the team that beats Ohio State. Like, no, it's absolutely not.
I don't know, man. I think Ann Arbor, they think they smell blood too after that Oregon game. But the difference between Oregon's offense and Michigan's offense is, I think, you know, we mentioned Oregon didn't do anything fancy. I think until proven otherwise, Michigan, I don't know, man, they didn't have to do anything. I think that's okay. But what the problem was, if you don't put teams away, and then, or if you get behind the sticks, like you were saying, you say, okay, Cade, you know, figure it out. He's never had to. And when you put him in a position against, in big moments, you just have no idea if he's going to be capable. And you don't have to wait until those big moments to have him do that. But Jim Harbaugh likes to wait, and it's never worked out for him. So,
Also, I never want to hear anything about a Michigan offensive coordinator ever again, because they brought in what's his name to be this great offensive coordinator, and he's got his system. He got totally cucked by Jim Harbaugh. Like, he stopped calling his own plays. So this Josh Gattis, like, oh, speed in space, speed in space. What happened to that? That's gone. Mm-hmm. You're just playing old school Michigan football, mm-hmm. which is fine. You're going to win 8-9 games playing that most of the time. But
yep.
if you want to be what you say you are, then you have to bring something more to the table. And I just don't, maybe they've got that down the line somewhere, but like this year, it's not happening. They'll be fine. But like, you can't tell me that MSU can't beat that team. Well, I mean, they did it last year.
Harbaugh has Jedi mind tricked the Michigan fans into being happy with 9-3 again. And that, my friends, is an accomplishment.
It's his greatest gift.
So let's fast forward to upcoming national games. A lighter slate this week, because a lot of the good ones are in the Big Ten. Virginia Tech heads to West Virginia. I think this one's just going to be kind of fun. Just kind of chaos.
Yeah, the Virginias playing each other, I'm all about it.
Mm-hmm. Then you got Alabama heads to Florida, which should be on paper, you know, the just program names, an awesome game, right? I think, though, that Alabama, the spread on this one is hefty.
Listen, if Anthony Richardson, first of all, if you haven't watched him play for Florida, you should watch it because it's insanity.
Yeah.
This dude is incredible. Incredible. As good of a one-game player as you'll ever see. Like, can do, like, he is the next college football phenom waiting to happen. If he's playing, because I know he kind of pulled his hamstring last week, listen, Bama's going to win this game. Don't take what I'm saying for confidence in Florida, because I don't have that, especially if they don't play Richardson a ton. But, like, if he's playing, they can keep this game closer. Because it's a 2+ touchdown spread, I might actually consider Florida.
So, Florida is playing two quarterbacks. You may have heard of this before, when one Chris Leak and Tim Tebow did it back in 2006, and one a Natty doing it. The only successful two quarterback system I've ever heard of, by the way.
Yep, agreed.
Anthony Richardson's last game against South Florida, he went 3 for 3 for 152 yards and 2 touchdowns. The other quarterback was 14-22 for 151 yards and 1 touchdown and 2 picks. So, and Anthony Richardson also led the team in rushing, 4 carries for 115 yards and a touchdown. He had the ball to either run or throw 7 times, and he got 267 yards of offense and 3 touchdowns. 7 touches, 3 touchdowns.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Hitting me?
It's insane.
It's wild. So, I mean, Bama's has their hands full. They're 14.5-point favorites. But hey, it's in the swamp.
That's enough points that I'd be tempted to have Florida cover. I'm not crazy enough to ever bet against Bama, but if you are feeling crazy enough to bet against Bama, then that's a tempting place to do it.
Well, the great news is Florida has a dynamic player that's worth tuning in for on its own. And yep. then you just get to watch 17 first round picks play for Alabama. So the other night game for you, which will be some fun, is Arizona State, ranked 19th. I think they're falling. They keep just being forgotten. I think they've come through some, I don't know if they're actually any good, but they still have, I believe they have, what's his name? Jaden Daniels.
Jaden Daniels, yeah.
I think he's still there. They're traveling to BYU. And listen, if BYU can pull this off, it's back-to-back top 25 wins. I mean, all of a sudden, you're looking at potentially the best Big 12 team in program in BYU if once they join the conference, right?
Program. Oh, yeah. I would think so. Also, let's just talk about the sheer culture clash that we're about to see on display in Provo this week.
Great.
I mean,
Oh man, that's
if I could be walking around some parking lots watching these tailgates go on, because there's no way all the Arizona State people realize that you can't buy alcohol.
It's so, going to be challenging for some.
It's going to be a lot of airport size or like plane size travel things that are getting busted out on this trip, I think.
Dude, you're so right. I want to watch just the pregame. Like, can I get a feed of a pregame?
That's what I would like. I want to be in the police video observing the parking lots where tailgating is happening illegally.
No, dude, we just got to find a police scanner for this one. A blotter. All right, let's head to the Big Ten. Some league games and some other sprinkled in. Maryland heads to Illinois on a Friday night, which is exactly where it should be, because if it wasn't on a Friday night, no one would know what happened.
I think this game could go any way. You could tell me, you pick a random number generator, and I might believe that it's the final score for either team, just for the record. Like, it doesn't have to, like, I think Maryland should obviously definitely win this game, but like, you could easily convince me that they lose by 3 touchdowns.
Maryland is going to win this game by 30 something, and it's going to make all of us go, hey man, maybe Maryland's for real. And and we're all going to know it's not true, but we're all going to tell ourselves that, like, maybe this is the year it's different. So just feels right.
I like it.
All right. 11 a.m. kicks Central Time. The Northern Illinois Rocky Lombardis head into the Big House. And last week, I was live tweeting through another game that no one was watching. But the Rocky Lombardis were down huge in their game, and they came all the way back. I don't even remember who they played. That's where my headspace was at. But they were down by 26. And they came all the way back and took the lead only to lose on the last possession. So, hey, man, Rocky's been in the Big House before. He's not afraid. Oh, they played Wyoming. They lost 50-43. It was
fantastic. Oh, man, the lonesome men from Laramie. Rocky's done it before there, and that's the only reason they should be even remotely excited to go play this game, because Michigan's back to their – back on their bullshit of insane running. So I got a feeling this could get ugly for the Huskies.
Rocky.
Speaking of ugly, hold on. The next one. Whoa.
Rocky Lombardi led team heads into the Big House as a 24 point underdog. What could go wrong? All right. So you were alluding to the big game of the week, Junior, which is Nebraska heading to Oklahoma. Oklahoma, 22.5 point favorite. The only thing I could think of when I saw this was, you know, when you're like, you watch some street ball videos and you just hear a guy yelling, expose him, expose him. I think Nebraska's already been exposed, but I want Oklahoma to win by 50.
I mean, dude, I got a feeling that they want to win by 50 too. So, this one's going to get bad. I think this one's going to be whatever the spread is for Oklahoma, I'm probably going to still take them, and I might do it now. That has disaster written all over it.
Oh man. Here's my game of the week. And I don't even know I don't know if it's allowed to do it this way, because it's a group of five team against a power five team and a Big Ten team. And I'm picking Indiana to be doing the opening. I think they're hosting Cincinnati, number 8 Cincinnati. I think this is the perfect recipe. I don't think Indiana is nearly as bad as the score indicated in Iowa City, where they lost 34-6. I think Indiana got back on track this week. And here's the little detail that has me wanting to pick Indiana. Mr. Luke Fickle, his eyes are elsewhere this week.
Mm-hmm.
Guys are in Los Angeles. He and his agent are having conversations about that USC job. Distracting to him. That's distracting to the program. That's distracting. And Indiana is not your dad's Indiana team. I'm just saying.
Nope. Indiana,
I think they get back on track here.
Yeah, I mean, that's such a good point about the USC thing, because you know they're reading that. You know they're reading that. And he's a good enough coach where they could still go in and win this game, and they're probably the more talented team. But I got to say, like, this is a top 15 game coming into the season, more or less. And I could easily see Indiana getting back on track. I'm not typically a root for the conference guy. I'm kind of like, I usually root against the conference for whatever reason, but because I don't like, they're my enemies. Why would I root for them? I'm team petty. But that being said, I kind of think Indiana's going to get back on track in this one. I'm kind of with you. It's the reverse hope. It's the Ebo game of the week.
I mean, Desmond Ridder is nice. If you get a chance to watch this game.
He's a good player.
Cincinnati is quarterback's a stud, but I don't know, man. I feel okay about Indiana in this one. And speaking of, you know, I said we get back to it. The Clemson quarterback that transferred, I think you actually mentioned Kelly Bryant transferred to Missouri.
Yes. Didn't he transfer to North Carolina and then Missouri?
That may have happened. I don't know.
I think he went to North Carolina first. But, yes, he also did transfer.
Okay.
Correct.
We remembered that one.
All right, good talk.
Minnesota travels to Colorado, and – This one was shelved on the Pac-12 network for nobody to watch, which is probably the right thing for everybody.
Yeah, this is a very like similar program. I feel like they like mirrors each other in their respective conferences. I don't know how this goes. I got a hard time seeing Colorado scoring a whole lot of points. They looked really, really bad offensively last week, but. Yeah, this is kind of one I don't want to spend much time on it, but this is really one that I think
I don't even want to talk about
it. PJ kind of needs it, man. PJ kind of needs it.
He's gonna reel off a handful. He'll be fine. This is a good game, I think, a little sneaky because when Purdue heads into South Bend to take on Notre Dame. Notre Dame, they have not looked great.
Whoa. I watched some of the infamous Peacock game, which was, I think it's great. I think they should do it more. I think it's so funny that people were so mad. So I'm all about keeping this tradition going. Notre Dame is all about tradition after all.
Elaborate on the Peacock game.
What?
Elaborate for me.
Oh, well, this was the only, this game was not on television. This game was only on Peacock. NBC's app, and there were a ton of technical issues on it. But I also thought it was really funny that Notre Dame, this super proud program, literally you couldn't watch their game on television like it was 1962 or something like that. So I thought that was a wonderful use of technology on NBC's part. So that was pretty funny. Toledo choked this game away though. Like they should have beaten Notre Dame last week. And Notre Dame, Jack Cohn looking way better than he ever looked at Wisconsin, led them back down the field, popped his finger back in after he dislocated it and threw a winning touchdown pass. But they have been, I don't think they're feeling a lot better about the Florida State win after this weekend. So needless to say, they're in hot water. This is a big one for them to bounce back and get.
Okay, so let's keep – yeah, that's a good – I think Purdue not good, but they always play Notre Dame tough, it feels like.
Yeah, it's Indiana. They hate each other. Well, they hate Notre Dame.
Exactly, yeah, a good point. And a game that a team I forgot to mention and that should combine into the New England power team, Delaware, travels to Rutgers.
The Fighting Joe Flaccos.
Hey, man, Rutgers, keep racking those dubs, baby. I don't care. Another game that's going to get out of hand, Kent State travels to Iowa. And listen, Kent State, not as bad as they used to be, but Iowa should probably handle things. There might be a little bit of an emotional letdown, but they'll figure things out. One caveat about Iowa, though, I want to throw out there. Their defense has scored, I think, 3 touchdowns in the past 2 games. And it's obviously amazing. That's not sustainable, obviously. The thing I want to watch out for is, can Iowa put offensive drives together? You know, I don't know that. And this is a type of game where they need to start figuring out if they can do things on their own on that side of the ball. Because relying on your defense for points is not a great recipe.
This is why they are still frisky Iowa, because they're playing frisky ball. They're not going out and bludgeoning team. Like, yeah, they've got great turnover luck right now. And I'm with you. That's going to come into play big time when they start really squaring off against more. Well, when they get into the meat of the Big Ten schedule, but they should handle this one.
Tulsa travels to the Shoe, 26.5-point favorites for Ohio State in this afternoon game. I mean, you feel comfortable taking that? Or
They'll cover.
How do you feel about the Nerd Bowl? Northwestern travels to Durham, North Carolina to take on Duke. This one, again, shelved on the ACC network, probably a good thing for everybody. I think
these are two of the worst. Sorry, go ahead.
Northwestern's a favorite, but I don't even think I can watch this one.
Yeah, these are two of the worst programs in college football right now. These two teams are just genuinely not good. We'll put it this way. This is also probably each of their respective, like, maybe not best chance to get a win the rest of the way, but certainly not. It's certainly got to be one of the one or two best chances they each have remaining on the schedule. So these nerds are probably smart enough to know that, so they should really take advantage of it.
Yeah, they're crunching the numbers. They know what's at stake here. And then the final game, the Big Ten game of the week, exciting game, overlooked game, I feel like, at the beginning of the year as we talk about Power 5 versus Power 5. Auburn heads to Happy Valley, whiteout game. Penn State, number 10 overall, Auburn 22. Think this one's going to be the night game on ABC. Penn State favored about 6 points. Listen, I think Penn State handles this because of one reason. Your favorite boy, Bo Nix, is still quarterback.
I was just going to say, I need to know nothing more about either team besides that Bo Nix, I had to check, is still the quarterback there. Yeah. Let's hold on. I want to actually pull it up because I looked at his stats from this past week. Hold on. Just bear with me here. Yep. So Auburn beat Alabama State 62-0. So naturally you're thinking Bo Nix probably had an incredible day, right?
Right.
9 of 17 for 108 yards and two touchdowns. Just remarkable shit. 39.4 QBR. Like, he is so bad. I'm sorry. Like, if he didn't have the name Bo Nix, they would have run his ass out of town literally years ago. And if he hadn't beaten Oregon, he probably would never have started another.
It's true. I don't know how bad are their kids behind him? I guess.
Well, here's the thing. Their backup looks like the man. Their backup is exactly the guy I'd create in NCAA. His name's TJ Finley. He's 6'7", 246. He went two for two for 66 yards in this and a touchdown against Alabama State.
Here's a take. I need to know. Here's a take. Bone, we see that kid on Saturday. Bo gets benched.
Yeah, I think it's time. He's from Ponchatoula, Louisiana. This is just the cool number one, just the coolest guy possible.
Hell yeah. Well,
But Penn State's gonna win by 1,000.
I hope. Listen, I want Penn State to win if Bo Nix is playing. If that kid comes in, War Eagle.
Absolutely. We're a big TJ Finley podcast.
Okay, hit me with why this program stinks, the Miami Hurricanes. I think you got a handful of good ones this week.
Yeah, we got some good ones this week. Let's see here. Okay. Maddie Mess says, the last time I was in Miami, I watched a grown man haggle a vendor for a full hour and a half trying to buy a shirt that said, "I'm in Miami, bitch," only to finish the transaction and the shirt said, "I'm in Miami Beach." Maxwell Klitsky says, the university is located in Coral Gables, which reminds us that the coral reef is dying, and that makes everyone sad.
Oh, man, that was tough.
Go MSU Butt Boy 69 says, that the cat jumped from the balcony in their Saturday night game to avoid having to watch another Mandy and T.S. coach game. Well, let's see. We got, I think we had some other ones in here. Hold on. I'm literally just scrolling through the mentions right now because I had some good ones that were sent my way. But I also had an argument where someone told me that Luke Fickell should stay at Cincinnati instead of go to USC, and that's what's clogging up my entire feed. But here we go.
Oh, you got it? Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Quentin BBBNBBB says, they're a fake college. Everyone knows Miami University is in Ohio. Kevin Fitton says Miami decided to use a guy named Nevin as their bag man, and he got caught because he was also running a Ponzi scheme. And then finally, I'll stop with Matt Wiggins, who says more like hurricanes. This tweet was for John_Kirby.
Oh,
thank you, Matt.
Beautiful though.
Good stuff all the way around.
There are some that maybe we can't read.
There are several we can't read, which is why it took me so long to find the ones that I found.
But I want those folks to know that their tweets were very much appreciated.
In private, you know who you are. We enjoyed many of them.
All right, so we have a game, and it is it's the 11. It's the morning kickoff on ABC. Michigan State back in the national scene here against number 24 Miami. As we mentioned, they took a beating to Alabama. Who among us, man?
Whomst, I say.
And then they came, you know, they gutted out a win over Appalachian State. Props could have rolled over, didn't. So they have a little fight in them. They opened as about a 7.5-point favorite. It's down to about 6.5. It's still moving a little bit. Computers say about a 30% chance of a Michigan State win. And I think the important thing to take away is 2 weeks ago and all summer, this was an auto L. This was an auto loss on the schedule for everyone, you know, going down the list. And all of a sudden, it's become a puncher's chance game in a lot of people's eyes. And that alone is exciting because we mentioned this one felt like one of the games that just we were going to get outclassed. And who knows, maybe that still happens. But you got to feel good about where you sit today, just even having the conversation about how you can win instead of how to not get embarrassed.
Yeah, I think, yeah, to your point, I certainly agree with that take. This was one of those games where we were looking at the schedule and it was just, yeah, nope, that's a loss. Move on. Hope you don't embarrass yourselves. After the last 2 weeks, not only for Michigan State, but for Miami, this has all of a sudden become a very real game. It's hard in these two games to really tell what they do well and what they don't do well. I mean, it's really difficult to say that they to take anything away from playing Alabama in your week one game. It's just really hard to do. Yeah. So that's difficult. However, I think we can glean a little bit from what happened against Appalachian State and point out some things that are good and some things that would worry me if I was a Canes fan. So first and foremost, everything kind of starts with their quarterback, De'Eriq King. You probably remember him from Houston, where he played for like 4 years, and he's 24 years old. He's been in college football for quite some time. So good things about De'Eriq King is he has tons of experience. Guy can move a little bit in the pocket. I mean, he has had moments, especially at Houston, where he was electric with the ball in his hands, running especially. But he did tear his ACL in the Cheez-It Bowl last year, which that's a tough thing to have on your Wikipedia page for the rest of your life. But he has looked a little bit better of late. It seems as though, like, I don't think when I've watched him in both of these games that you're not looking at a guy and being like, oh man, he really can't move around. He may have lost a little bit of that explosion, but that's a big part of his game. So taking even a half step away from that guy kind of changes who he is. And for him, that's a big deal because he's never been a great downfield, like stand in the pocket and deliver type of passer. He's been, his game is really predicated upon that movement and making his opponents kind of second guess what he's going to do and prepare for a really multiple offense. Now, last week, he sort of bounced back a little bit. He had 19 carries for 79 yards. Trailer was second on the team in rushing behind Cameron Harris, which, yes, is spelled exactly like you expect, who had 18 carries for 91 yards and a touchdown. Passing, 20 completions for 200 yards, 20 of 33. I think that's kind of no touchdowns. It's kind of what I feel like you're going to get from Derek King more often than not. I don't know if there's these big explosive plays in his game as much anymore. And to Appalachian State's credit, they did a good enough job defensively to keep him from that. So I think if you're looking at Miami from an Appalachian State defensive position, contain Derek King. Like, this guy can still, maybe he's lost a half step, he could still bust a big one. Like, he busted a 29 yarder against Appalachian State. That's in his bag. He can do it.
So Austin,
that's a big deal. Go ahead.
And let's talk about that. And we've been hemming and hawing about how Quavarius Crouch has been, you know, leaning, earning, yes, and trying to figure out this linebacker role. It's a lot to take in. This is his first year of real coaching in the position. We've talked about that at length. How much easier is it if you just say Cal Halliday is going to figure out the defense? Quavarius, we're going to have you spy Derek King. Just follow him everywhere. You know, and probably Crouch is the only linebacker outside of an elite team like Alabama or later Clemson when Miami plays that's going to have the speed at the linebacker position to keep up with Derek King. I think that's a huge advantage for Michigan State.
I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, I think it'll be very interesting. And Scotty Hazleton's proven to be a very good defensive coordinator. And I think, again, Crouch, this is one of those things where you sort of take the thinking out of it for him. Don't overanalyze it. Just make sure he doesn't get loose. Like, that's kind of your entire thought process with Crouch this week. Now, whether they actually follow through with that or not, you know, remains to be seen. But I think he's the type of athlete that you can do that with. I will also be interested to see if maybe they utilize Xavier Henderson in that role a little bit. I don't think Miami is this team that's super equipped with like major downfield targets. I mean, they do have Charleston Rambo. Will Mallory is a nice tight end. They also have the receiver Keyshawn Smith. Awesome name. True freshman, I believe. Redshirt freshman, who led the team with four catches for 70 yards last week. They did bite off some chunk plays. I mean, Rambo had a 33-yard catch and Smith had a 36-yarder. But I'll be interested to see if they bring a safety down into the box or maybe if Michael Dowell plays a little bit of that role. So I think you'll see some mixing and matching. Where the real pressure comes in and where you really hope guys are healthy is that defensive end. Like Drew Beasley, Drew Jordan, and Tank Brown, like they got to be ready to get some snaps in because, A, from a depth perspective, you're going to need those guys out there. You made the point early on, mugginess, hot. You need those bodies. And then also you need that experience in there. Between Jordan and Beasley, like they're probably going to do a decent amount of read option stuff, and it's the end's job to make sure that this quarterback doesn't get loose and to contain him and force him up into the pocket instead of out to the side of the field. So big amount of responsibility there. But I think this offense hasn't looked super explosive. Again, that's not to say that it can't be explosive, but you know, they have the chance. I think if you can contain King, especially on the ground, and you make him for the most part beat you from the pocket, like I think you're probably going to have, he's going to get loose once or twice. It's just going to happen. He's too good not to. But if you can keep him in the pocket for the most part, I really think that you're giving yourself a real fighter's chance.
Yeah, King's a nice, he's a really good college player, and he may have been a good pro if hadn't gotten hurt. Maybe he still will be. I don't know. You know, this is a guy that you just want, you kind of hold your breath every time a play breaks down, but that's where you have a guy, as you mentioned, like Dowell, Xavier Henderson, and Quavarius Crouch that have the athleticism to clean things up when things get broken. I think, as you mentioned also, Miami has talent on the skill positions that Michigan State hasn't seen yet. not even close. Northwestern is going to look like they are running through mud compared to these guys. And we've seen Michigan State struggle against that. You know, what's going to happen this time around? Why is this any different? Is Michigan State going to just try and keep everything in front of them and rely on their offense? Gasp. Michigan State rely on offense to ball control. Perhaps, you know, keeping them off the field. Who knows, right? This is a game where if Michigan State wants to win, though, I think they're going to have to definitely hold them to field goals. You know, that's going to be so huge because they are going to move the ball a bit. They just are.
I think you got to keep them under 30 if you want to win this game. I think you have to keep them under 30 if you want any chance. And that's to your point. Like if we flip to the other side of the ball and we talk about I don't think that's an unreasonable request. I mean, Appalachian State held them to 25. I think Michigan State can probably go in with a big crowd at their back, by the way. And I would expect a huge turnout for Michigan State. I think they can do that. The question is offensively, you know, are you able to then go out and put up 30 points or in that neighborhood? And again, this is kind of where things are tough to tell from a stats perspective. We know Miami's got talent, but their seven leading tacklers are all in the secondary. I think that says something about what teams are doing against them. And something to back that up is the fact that they have two sacks through two games. Now, again, one of those is against Alabama, but the other one's against Appalachian State. They were able to get one sack. They did have seven tackles for loss. So, like, that is impressive. Obviously, they were getting to people in the backfield, but that was really more of the running backs than the quarterback, obviously. So, they had five. They had five quarterback hurries, so they're flirting with the quarterback. They're going to give Peyton Thorne a little bit to think about, but you know, there are holes to expose. I mean, they lost their two best pass rushers from last year's team in Gregory Russo and Quincy Roche, guys that are not here anymore. So it's some new faces, but they do have good players in the secondary. Bubba Bolden, Gervin Hall Jr. are both nice players. They got a transfer from Georgia and Tyreek Stevenson, who is a good corner. So it's going to be a little bit of two things, actually a lot of different things. First of all, we're going to find out if the offensive line is actually good or if it's been a little bit of flash in the pan mirage, because this is going to be by far the biggest test that they've had. And if they can run the ball, that does a lot for you in a game like this.
Miami's D-line is real deal. Getting embarrassed by Alabama's offensive line doesn't mean much to me. Miami playing mortals, they have a really good defensive line. I think they struggle at the linebacking position if there was a vulnerability on defense. So can Kenny Walker get to this, you know, to the second level? We see what he can do after contact. And I think the other piece, Austin, is you have another running back in Jordan Simmons, and you're going to need him this time around.
This is one game to me, by the way, because you mentioned those linebackers. This is a game where you'd love to have a go-to tight end because of that exact reason. But this is a game where Connor Hayward's going to be able to make – I think he's going to get opportunities. And this is the type of game where you find room for a gadget guy, that guy that's down the depth chart that they're not expecting, because they're going to prepare for Jaden Reed. They're going to prepare for Jalen Naylor. Kenneth Walker, I'm sure, has all of their attention. Like, they're going to know these guys are coming. Whether they can stop them or not is another story, but they're going to know they're coming. Connor Hayward's the type of dude as a safety blanket. Maybe Tyler Hunt. I mean, like, these guys are going to get opportunities to make plays, and they need to come through and do it. And honestly, I think the pressure more than anything else is on the offensive coordinator. Why am I not thinking of his name?
Jay Johnson.
I was trying to think of, like, I know it starts with Jay. What's his first name? It's Jay. it's on Jay Johnson this week. He's put together two really nice games so far last year. But we still don't really know, right? Like, last year was such an abomination that we don't know who to pin that on. It's feeling more like a talent thing than a coaching thing because of what we've seen out of Johnson so far. But This is really on him. He's got to put Thorne, knowing he's young, going on the road for really the second time in his career, you know, big, big stage, second time in his career after that Penn State. It's going to be a different atmosphere because people will be in the crowd. Like, this is, he's got to put Peyton Thorne in a position to perform. That doesn't mean taking deep shots, but you just have to call an effective game plan and not stick with things if they're not working. They're going to be out-talented, plain and simple. But if that offensive line can hold up, give Thorne a little bit of time, I think using his legs in this one would be really, really smart. Kind of that's one of those things you can't super prepare for if you're a defense. So I think that's a big deal. One other thing to point out, last thing, is defensively, MSU's got, I think they have a chance to get after Derek King. Appalachian State had 2 sacks and 8 tackles for loss. That's a lot of action behind the line against Miami. And you have to be able to, like, this is the game where all those little things, the special teams, the punting, Bryce Berenger is going to play a huge role here. The kick return game, the not taking penalties, the putting them behind the sticks. This is where those little things that good teams do, that's how you win this game. Not a talent for talent. This is, if you're going to win this game, you're going to have to do some of those things really well and then execute like a good team would too. So I think it's a game that they can, at the very least, hang in.
Mm-hmm. They can hang. I have yet to see Michigan State produce a pass rusher. And that's why you see Xavier Henderson being pulled up and blitzing. That's why you're seeing Quavarius Crouch being let loose. I don't know if you're gonna have to do it, because I don't know if this defensive line yet, the guys that you want to pop have not popped. And it's also gonna be a gut check game when you talk about the heat. If you're still in the game, you know, in the end of the third quarter, fourth quarter, like, who's more conditioned?
Yeah,
talked absolutely. About that. Mel Tucker talked about that ad nauseum, spring and summer, how his team was always going to be better conditioned than the other team. Well, here it is. This is the game you've been literally practicing for, this one. So see if that comes to life, or we'll see if we're hands on hips, hands on knees, hurting. It's a big one. This is Mel's first, I think, I guess he's had other tests, but this one feels like it's a lot of momentum with the program. Are you ready to take the next step? This is a next step game for Michigan.
Yeah, I mean, this is your big opportunity. National game.
It's ABC. National game. This is it.
Yeah, it's a massive, massive, massive opportunity. Now, I don't think that should be, like, we shouldn't be saying, oh, if they lose this game, it's this, you know, massive failure. But at the same point in time, it's a very, very real opportunity to go do something. And if nothing else, make a statement that, hey, we're like, don't forget about us. Like, we're building something here. And, you know, at a minimum, I think they have the opportunity. I really think they have the opportunity to do that. So I'm certainly feeling better today than I felt about, you know, this coming into the season. And let's go get a win.
You got a puncher's chance. And you got a puncher's chance with a head coach like Mel Tucker and an offensive coordinator who finally has a few athletes. Let's roll the dice and see what we got. And if you – at the end of this game, you'll know exactly where Michigan State's program is at and how much further they need to go. Win or lose, you'll know. This is a barometer test game.
I agree. Couldn't agree more. I think they got a shot. If based on what we've seen, this team can really just keep cruising. So I don't know. I'm feeling okay. I'm not going to make any predictions aside from that MSU hopefully just doesn't get embarrassed, you know?
These are the games we get to enjoy, though. You know, we talked about it at the beginning of the year. This year was going to be a grind. You got to enjoy the grind. These are the games. There's no pressure on Michigan State. It's a national game. It's on ABC. Who knows? We have potentially an all-conference, if not all-American running back. Like, who knows? Like, just sit back and enjoy it. This is the time to enjoy it. You can stress out about these ones years from now when we're competing for a natty. Yeah, that those are the real stressors. These ones are fun. Have a few dad pops and enjoy it, folks.
I couldn't agree more, John. Couldn't agree more. Enjoy when the expectations aren't so high. All right, guys. I think that's it for today. As always, thank you all for sticking with us. For John, this has been Austin. We'll catch you next week.
See you.